Welcome back. I hope that you were helped by the interview we had last week with our last session when you did the session with a friend of mine, just to understand again that leaders come in various styles and various senses of calling, and some of us don't even know we're leaders at certain points, and God has to call us into that. And so just wanted you to hear from somebody who's out there and has done this for years, and his leadership skills were developed. They weren't just natural, they were developed because he didn't realize he was a leader. So I hope that was helpful to you. This session, we're going to move on to what I'm calling, as you'll note on the slide, levels of leadership, leadership levels. Now, this is going to be helpful to you as you function as a leader to realize that the extent of your leadership or the authority that you have is different depending on what level you're on. Let me give you some ideas about what that looks like. Now, here again is this model we've been looking at for a long time, the leader interacting with culture to develop a vision of a preferred future and then doing the actions and the planning and the prayer that will lead to that future. That's what we're talking about, and we've been talking about the leader now for a long time. A few more sessions on that, and then we'll move on to culture. Leadership levels. Person who's best developed this, I think, is a man named John Maxwell in his book, Developing the Leader Within You. Many people have talked about these various levels, but he puts it in these wonderful P's so that they're memorable. He looks at these five levels of leadership. Each level that you go up expands your authority, gives you a greater a space in which, a greater magnitude of what you can do in that particular level of leadership. So these are expanding levels. The first one is position. Second one, permission. Third is production. Fourth is people development. And the last one is personhood, that people will follow you who you are. Now, I want to spend time today just talking about each of these because it's going to be helpful depending on where you are, deciding where you are as you look at your situation and where you are a leader, where you are and what you can do in that particular level. So the first one, when you come into a new position, you are given authority because you've got a job description. You've been hired to do this particular job. Now, when you're new at that job, that's the limit of your authority, is your job description. In fact, you'll notice, as I put here in the notes, you have stated authority. Now, you'll note also that the younger generation doesn't accept stated authority very well. Millennials don't trust people just because they have a job description. And this doesn't always work well with volunteers because they don't trust people who just have a job description. White-collar workers will tend to question authority of somebody who just has a positional authority. But this is where you start. It's where everybody starts in a new organization. You've just hired on as a pastor or a youth pastor or a music director, or maybe you're in the world of business, or you're in the world of a factory somewhere. When you take a job, you have this set of responsibilities, and that's where you have authority to function. Now, there's a challenge with this level, and that is that, first of all, when you first come into a position, there are going to be some people who won't let you or won't want you to, for a variety of reasons, not all of them bad, they won't want you to take more authority than you have. And in fact, well, they will try to take your responsibility. When I first accepted a call to come to the church where I ended my active ministry in the pastoring sense, we had a staff person, and my job description said that I was responsible as the senior pastor for the staff, and I was responsible for deciding staff meetings and developing what happened in those staff meetings. Well, this particular staff person had been there for several years, and I wasn't sure if he liked me, knew me, or he didn't know me, but did he like me? Was he willing to trust my stated authority? And he really wasn't. And so I kept getting surprised because he would come to staff meetings and he would have this agenda of things he wanted to do at staff meeting. And he wanted to show this video and he wanted to discuss this book and he wanted to do these things. And finally I had to sit down with him and say, wait a minute, wait a minute. This is my job. And several times over email we went back and forth. It says, this is my job. And so that's one side of the equation of person who is in this positional authority. You just have the position. The other side is, if you go too far trying to expand your authority, there will be an effect for some that will snap back because they don't like what you're doing. They don't think you have that authority. For instance, when I went to the church in California, I was the first staff person there, and I was working with somebody who had been there for several years, seven years, and so he had authority that was way above mine as far as the trust of the congregation. So I'm coming in, but he said it was his idea that I came in new, and so I came in with all kinds of opportunities to make change because people wouldn't get on a new person the way they had been getting on him for some of the changes that were going on. And so we decided to make some changes. First change I made was the bulletin. Now, in my tradition, the bulletin's an important thing. You're handed it when you come in to worship, and you go into the worship center and you read the bulletin. And in that bulletin is a summary of what's going to happen in worship that day, usually, and there's some announcements about people who are sick and programs that are coming up and that sort of thing. Well, in that church, the bulletin had on the front page a drawing of the church building. Now, I remember, as we sat with together, I with this older pastor, and we're talking about, well, what things should we talk about changing, big and small? One of the small ones was, I said, you know, this is crazy. If somebody's come into the church building, they've seen the church building. Why do we put it on the front of the bulletin? Wouldn't it be a great idea if we got some artists in our church to draw what they think is the perception of the church, its ministry? And so I had three artists who volunteered to develop a drawing, and the one that came up first was just a delightful drawing. It was kind of a field of wheat, and in this wheat was a caterpillar, and the caterpillar was eating, and then in the picture, there was gradual development until this butterfly that's flying. A beautiful picture of what we were trying to do. Taking people who are lost, introducing them to Jesus Christ, and then seeing them grow in Christ until they're flying, they're soaring with Him on wings like eagles, as Isaiah says. Well, the first Sunday that bulletin came out, I started getting phone calls by the time I got home from church of people. One woman just said, I wept all the way home. I've lost my church. See, they didn't think. They didn't give me the authority to make those kind of changes. I had not earned the right yet to make those kind of changes. And so if you're at this position, you have to be very careful. Here are some things you should be doing. Know your job description. Know it well. Know well what you are expected to do. Know well what you are responsible for. And then accept responsibility in that area. Don't let anybody take it away from you, but you accept the responsibility to do those jobs that are listed on your job description. Third thing to do is do more than expected. In other words, go beyond. Now, you got to be careful where you're stepping on somebody else's authority or somebody else's position, but do more than expected. I sold clothes at one time in my working life, and the owner of the store once took me out to dinner, and we were talking, and he was just giving me tips. I was in college at the time, giving me tips. And he said, you know, if you want to succeed in life, always do more than is expected. And so, you know, so I would help with cleanup, and I would just do more than my job description, which is meet people as they came into the store, help them find the clothes they want, and then work the cash register, make sure that they pay what the cost of the clothing is, and that was my job. But he said, you know, if you're looking around, looking clean up or sweep up the back or get new merchandise out, there are a variety of other things I could do beyond my job description that allowed him and the manager of that store to trust me more. And then lastly, if you're at that level, you're new in the organization, you've only got that authority, offer ideas for change and improvement to those in authority over you. And hopefully you do that with a spirit that is accepted, that you can say, you know, I've been thinking. And you've got to earn the right to do that as well. So that's the first level, is this positional authority. The second level is permission. I love the quote by Fred Smith that's here. Fred Smith is a businessman who built a couple of very successful businesses. He said, leadership is getting people to work for you when they are not obligated. Well, that's this level of permission, that people aren't going to follow you or listen to your authority just because you have a position, but because you have a relationship with them. There is a bond between you. So at this level, what you are doing is investing in people. You're getting to know them. You're letting them get to know you. You're developing a closeness in your work life together that allows them to follow you, because it's good to come to work, because they feel like they're coming to work and they're coming among friends. This is a very important level to come to. Now, I put on the bottom of this slide, don't skip this level. It's very easy for somebody to try to go from the positional authority and jump over the relationship part of it to right to production. But the reality is, unless people know you and you know them, you know their name, you know their family situation, etc., they aren't going to give you a clear leadership mandate above that if you don't do that work. Now, there are boundaries there and all that sort of thing. I'm going to talk about that next time. But just be aware, don't skip this level. Permission, it's built on the relationship that you have with people. If you're at this level, love your people more than you love procedures. I like that, because it's easy for those of us in leadership to develop systems, and we want these systems to thrive, and so we are committed to developing systems that work, and we love those systems. But at this level, you have to love people more than procedures. And working with people is always a challenge. People don't always get along. And so you have to do win-win decisions with your people. In other words, you don't just make decisions at this level and hand them down to people saying, do this, as we talked about last time in the styles of leadership. You can't be an authoritative, even an autocratic, a beneficial leader, benevolent leader to them. They won't accept it. And so you've got to do win-win. You have to bring them in. Now, that win-win idea is one that was popularized by Stephen Covey many years ago in his book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. And I had the privilege of seeing him once demonstrate this in a conference where he was speaking. He said, who here is pro-life? Well, there were a lot of people pro-life, meaning that they were opposed to abortion in our country. And then he said, now I want somebody, if you'll admit it, if you are pro-abortion. And he got these two people up there. Now, here is a vast difference between these two people. And yet he sat down and he said, now we're going to try to work toward a win-win decision about what you should do about the abortion issue. And that was amazing. Over the next about 30 minutes, he brought these people to some agreements with each other. First of all, that, you know, abortion is probably not the preferable solution. Adoption is a better one. Even the one who is pro-abortion could admit that adoption, with all the families that are looking for children to adopt, that's probably a preferable solution to pregnancies that weren't planned. But, he said, I'm still for having abortion available, etc. But he got them to agree upon several different key things. And so much so that they left there feeling more warm about each other. Now, in our world today in the United States, I'm taping these sessions in 2018, in April of 2018. And right now, we have Donald Trump as our president, and we have people who are avid and vocal supporters of Donald Trump, and we have those who can't stand him. And Oprah Winfrey recently did a thing where she got the two different groups together in a room, and they talked together. And they found it such a valuable thing as they looked for win-win plans, activities for them for the future, that they kept the group going. And now many of them are running for office. It's been something that's been tracked in our news over here in the United States. So when you're dealing with your people, look for win-win. If they're opposed to something, well, talk about it. Work through new decisions by saying, okay, what can we agree on? What is common ground? So that involves including others in your journey as you move toward a preferable future. And then that last point there is, when you're at this level, you have to deal with difficult people and circumstances quickly. I had a negative evaluation in my ministry in California. And back then, for evaluation, input was given from people who reported to us, as well as other staff people, as well as people in the congregation and people who were among the elders, etc. Well, the people on staff gave me low marks in several areas because there was tension in the office. And I kept expecting the operations manager to take care of it. Well, really, it was my responsibility to make sure that the thing went smoothly. And so I let things go until finally people were just sick of it and they hated coming to work. Now, this is tough. I don't like confrontation. Generally speaking, most people don't. But there are times if you've got a problem, you got to deal with it. Don't let it fester. And if that problem is a person, you really got to deal with it. Because that can spread poison and will affect your effectiveness as a leader. Not just here, but if you are in that organization at other levels, this is the type of thing that can come back to bite you. So, position, permission. The next level is production. In the permission side, people will come and work for you and follow your leadership because they like it. It feels good to be at work. It feels good to be part of something with these people. At this level, people will come because something great is happening. Now, this is where things begin to roll as the Holy Spirit begins to work or as business starts to improve, that your leadership level expands greatly as you provide leadership that results in the product, whatever it is in your business or church. You know, the church begins to grow, or people begin to experience spiritual growth, or the youth ministry begins to flourish, and people are joining, and kids are coming to faith, or whatever it means for you to flourish. This is the area where all of a sudden your leadership will expand rapidly. It's production. In fact, I love the story about the company that hired a guy to do a new job. He had been at those first two levels, positional and permission, but now they wanted to move him up into this idea of production. And so they gave him a chance as a salesperson to go to a new field in the United States and sell their product. Well, he wasn't there very long. He sent a memo back to his supervisor, and this is what the memo looked like. It said, "I seen this outfit, which that ain't never bought a dime's worth of nothing from us, and I sold them some goods. I'm now going to Chicago." Well, his supervisor reads this and said, "This is terrible. This is awful English. How did we get somebody like this who's advanced this far in the organization?" And he had determined to fire him. Except the next day, he got a memo, another memo from the guy, and he says, "I come here and sold them $500,000. Well, now he's got this blooming producer, and still felt like he ought to fire him because the guy doesn't even know how to spell, doesn't know the English language, doesn't know how to write well. And so he brought it, dumped it into the lap of the president of the company, and he said, "Look, I got this problem. Look at these two memos." And the president looked at it and said, "But look at what he's producing." And so the next day, on the bulletin board in the company, those two memos from the salesperson were there, along with one from the president of the company, and he said this: "We've been spending too much time trying to spell instead of trying to sell. Let's watch those sales. I want everybody should read these letters from Gooch, who's on the road doing a great job for us, and you should go out and do like he done." Yeah, you see, if you have produced, the organization you're a part of or the part of the organization you're a part of begins to thrive, people will see, people will notice your leadership acceptance will grow in the organization. Now, if you are at this level, accept responsibility for growth. Accept responsibility for the fact that you now have responsibility for these people under you. Accept responsibility, not credit. Now, it's easy to accept the credit, but it's very important at this level that the credit goes to the team. And you find that with Mark Zuckerberg. Recently, the CEO, not the CEO, but the founder of Facebook appeared before Congress because they let some information get leaked out and it was used by another organization without their permission. But 87 million people, something like that, their material was shared, their information was shared. But he went to Congress here and appeared before Congress to testify, and he said, "It's my responsibility. It's my responsibility. We didn't do what we ought to do. It's my responsibility." And yet, when you hear him talk about the good things that Facebook has done and accomplished and the growth that it's experienced, he'll always talk about his team of people. So we accept responsibility for the growth of the organization and the problems. It's at this level that you are become responsible for developing a statement of purpose, a mission statement, which we'll talk about more next time, or in a little ways up when we start talking about vision. You develop accountability for results. People who report to you, you want them accountable in some way, so you develop a system for that to happen. It becomes your responsibility at this level to communicate the strategy and vision. And you become a change agent, looking at the culture more closely and defining how is it going to change in the next 2 to 3 to 5 years. And it's at this level that you have to start understanding timing as far as when people are ready for something to be introduced that is new. Some things need to be put off, and they aren't ready for it. I remember when I first introduced drama into the church I was part of in California, and there was just such a negative reaction to it that we began introducing, as many churches were back then, this is the late 80s, many churches were moving to dramatic kind of skits during the worship service. And so we were trying that out, and I had a group of people who had committed themselves to it, but the reaction was so negative that I realized the timing was not right. Now, 3 years later, as we gave them some small ideas about what that could look like, it went better. When we changed the worship style, we had a very traditional worship style when I went there, and yet we realized that if we were going to reach the next generation for Jesus Christ, we had to change that. And so we gradually would change it, but sometimes we'd have to step back a little bit and not move too fast because the people weren't coming with us. And so, you know, how could we keep the people moving forward and yet move forward? And so you have to understand timing at this level. People development is the next one. Once you get to that level of production, you are somebody who can begin looking for and investing in people. Now, this is where people don't just admire what you're able to produce, but they become loyal to you in the organization. And so this is where you identify people, key leaders, that need to have more development, that you're going to lean on. And this is where you become more, as I've said before, moving from a shepherd where you're doing everything, you have connection with everyone, to a rancher, and that you're responsible for the organization, but there now are levels within that organization, and you're developing ways where key leaders are going to step in and take responsibility for one or another part of the organization. This is a crucial level. I found out in a study several years ago now about church planters. The church planters tend to have a kind of a personality. They're entrepreneurs, and they're willing to step out and take great risks. And it's a wonderful thing to see church planters do that. But they found that there's a pattern with many of them who are not willing to go to this level of leadership. Because what would happen is the church would grow, and it would grow usually until about 200. And at that point, the church planter was trying to do everything yet, and he still had not adjusted his leadership style to go to the next growth barrier. 200 is a growth barrier within churches. It's really tough for churches to break that. And then about every 200 after that is a growth barrier. So they would get to about 200 churches under entrepreneurial leadership. And unless that leader had begun to give responsibility to some key other leaders, the church would then decline. There would be some kind of crisis, and it would go back to 100. But then it would go back up to 200, and they watched people who were doing this research just watch that process go as this wave would go up and then down and up and then down. The churches that made it and went beyond the 200 barrier, the 400 barrier and beyond, were led by leaders who realized that they had to give responsibility to other people. And so they were identifying key people. Now, so what do you do if you're at this level? Well, you place a priority on identifying and equipping leaders under you. Now, I put in red there, danger, choosing low. This is an idea that was made popular by Bill Hybels. And what he did was he said, you know, let's say that there's a scale on 1 to 10 as far as skill in leadership and potential for future leadership. And say, let's say you're a really great leader. You're at a 9 on that scale, or an 8. Let's make you an 8. If you're an 8 on that scale, what you tend to do is look for leaders who are 6s or 5s. You tend to look at those who aren't as good a leader as you. And eventually, when those people, as the organization grows, have to hire people to help them accomplish the mission and vision, they will be looking for fours or threes. And down on until pretty soon you've got people who aren't leading. They're managing. They're just managing the organization. And so he says, you know, if you're an eight, you've got to be looking for eights and nines. People that you can develop. And yes, you'll probably lose them. They may go to another organization sometime, but that's the kind of people who can move the organization forward. So don't choose low. Be a model for others to follow. Send key people to growth opportunities. Send them to seminars, classes, things that will help them see other leaders. A friend of mine sends his key people to another church where they pay staff people in their area of responsibility at a church that's larger and has more influence than they do. They pay a person on staff there to mentor them. And that's one of the ways he makes sure these key people are growing. And develop an inner core of people who complement your strengths. You don't want people who are all like you as far as personality, etc. So that's the fourth level, this idea of people development. It's a key area. Once again, this is where an organization can explode once the leadership begins to become diffused with key leaders who are expanding their areas in ministry. And then finally, the final level is that of personhood. And this is where people will follow you just because of who you are. And I put Billy Graham's picture up there because he's somebody who I think is a great model of that. You know, Billy Graham started an organization, went through all of these steps of leadership, but today people listen to him, not because he's out there speaking. In fact, he just recently died. Not because he's out there speaking, but they'll come and they'll want wisdom from him because of who he is. Jimmy Carter, one of our former presidents, has done a marvelous job of being a past president. And people come to him because it's just who he is. He's somebody who's wise. He's older. So it takes years. It takes a lifetime to get to this level. But some people do it. And you can think of people in your life that you know of who you'd say, yeah, I know who they are. They demonstrated over a long period of time dependability, of faithfulness. And so that's the kind of people I want to follow if they have any thing that they're a vision that they're trying to fulfill in their life. So those are the five levels. Now, in each of these levels, here's a summary. People will follow you. Remember, leadership is, at its core, influence toward a new vision. You'll have influence with people at the position level because you have a title and they have to follow you. At the permission level, it's based on relationships. That's they'll follow you, and they'll follow you because they want to, because they like you. Production, they'll follow you because of success. They see something happening and they want to do what you do. They want to act the way you act because you're successful. In people development, the key is reproduction of yourself and other people, and they will follow you because of what you are doing with them and investing in them and caring about them. And then the last one, personhood, the key is respect. They respect you and they'll follow you because of what you have done. Now, if you come to understand these five levels, it is going to help you be a more effective leader if you can understand where you are, which level you're on, and those key things about, okay, what can you do to start moving up that scale, to become a more effective and a leader with broader influence. And then the kingdom will be built because cultures will be changed and God will be glorified.